Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Experience summer comfort for less. Explore our sale on curtains and bedding. Perfect time to update and freshen your home.
Now, going back to the Irish League of Credit Union surveys that made a big splash across a lot of the news programmes yesterday. Bit of confusion among some of the people who rang into us as to how this figure of €1,450 was arrived at for primary school back to school costs. About three quarters of people are paying for the back to school costs out of general income. Another cohort of people paying out of savings, and then more people, and again, a smaller cohort going into debt of around €300 to get people back to school. €1,560 for secondary school back to school costs, and people wondering how these figures were arrived at. Geraldine, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon to you, Colm.
Sending kids back to school, you're not on to say it's cheap, but you have a few questions.
Yes, I'm past the stage of sending kids back to school, but I was interested in how, you know, these figures were issued and that there was no backup as to where the figures came from, as to what way the money was, you know, calculated. How come with free book scheme, free lunches, that the costs have gone up? As well as that, uniforms are available in chain stores more cheaply, I think. So I was just wondering, I think it would be much more beneficial for parents that have school-going kids come back to school, to know how these figures are come about. And it would be more educational and rather less scaremongering, if you know what I mean.
Well, the Irish League of Credit Unions said the independent research, they say it was conducted by iReach Insight on behalf of the Irish League of Credit Unions, and they said 729 parents participated, and the costs are made up, they say, of after-school care fees and contributions to schools, these so-called voluntary contributions, the cost of school trips, gym gear, sports equipment, shoes, extracurricular activities, school lunches, books, uniforms and clothing, and transport to school costs. That's what they break it down as. But
right,
you're questioning anyway, how come school books and
put
meals aren't being factored in, is it?
Correct, yes. Put figures on these different costs. X, Y, and Z. How much has each section gone up, for instance? School meals shouldn't be a cost. Like, I'm even thinking of the basics, like when my kids are in school, we'd buy new lunch boxes, say, going back to school, there's no need for lunch boxes anymore. Very simple things like that. There must be some savings. Covering up books, well, when you don't buy the books anymore, that cost isn't there. So how come the costs are rising? You know, you should have some savings showing in my books, you know, if you pardon the pun, that there should be a statement as to how the costs are increasing.
All right, well,
it would be much more beneficial for parents.
Okay. Now, look, we got a breakdown of it. We put in for a spokesperson from somebody for the Irish League of Credit Unions, but there was nobody available, they said, and they sent us instead a couple of tables of figures. So bear with me here, and I know I'm dropping these on you just as you are, so I don't know if you have a pen and paper. But anyway, on the issue of books, they say that in 2021 was €125. That is, it was down to €68 last year, but they say it's climbed slightly to 107. I'm not sure whether that's stationery or equipment or books, which are, as you say, in the free scheme. And for secondary school, that was €211 in 2021, and it's down to 173, according to this table here. On the lunches, they were down at 151 in 2021, and that's up to 170 in 2025. Again, not sure whether that's I don't know what time or how, you know, timeline, whether that's for a week, a month, how many children that's supposed to cover. And then in secondary school, it was €170 for lunches in 2021, up to 204 in 2025. So I'm not sure, again, the timeline covered on those lunches.
Yes, and the category of parents, like what schools, how or where, or what kids were were or what parents were asked for this survey or whatever, you know. Now, bearing in mind, I have the grace of time for credit unions. I remember when I had kids in school, we used to have a budget plan with the credit union, and we'd have money put aside for going back to school, you know, so they're quite good.
Yeah, this is where you can contact the credit union, and you can basically say, here are all of my predictable monthly outgoings of direct debit,
yes,
standing orders, everything else, and it goes in and you're left with the balance of your monthly or your two-weekly paycheck.
Absolutely.
And you're given effectively what you have to operate on for that period, and there might or might not be something left in the tank at the very end of the year to cover end-of-year Christmas costs as well, which is a very useful service.
Absolutely. The credit union is a great friend of parents in that sense. You
and
know?
You were not formerly of the National Parents Council, were you?
I was the National Executive.
Right, so costs to parents and dealing with schools, this is something that you would have watched like a hawk, apart from obviously sending your own kids through school.
Yes, indeed. And that's where I'd advise young parents to get involved in those kind of associations, because you can tease through costs and perhaps be active in helping the situation, as it were, cutting back on whatever costs may be increasing, or putting a bit of pressure on the powers that be or whatever, you know. But I'm still asking the question, or even putting pressure on the credit union to put more, as it were, meat in the sandwich, to give more detail of how they arrived at the total figure.
Right, to break it down a bit. So, you're not saying that you're open to be convinced. If it is €1,450, it seems, given what you were saying, it seems high to you, but you're open to be convinced if you got a full breakdown of
breakdown,
with all the related, you know, after school care, for example, is €197 for primary and €82 for secondary. Does that €82 cover, for example, paid for after school study? And if so, is it a week? Is it a month? Again, €197 for after school care in primary school. Is it that hour between 2 and 3 that's on site in schools before maybe they go on a school bus? And again, what time frame does that cover? That's the kind of detail you'd be looking to drill into accept these.
Yes, absolutely, Colin, because you can weigh that against the cost of having the child back home in the home house and heat and all the rest, and is it value for money and that sort of thing. That's the kind of teasing out that could be done by parent associations if they're given more detail, you know. So it's a great idea, but more detail, please, you know.
And you think that would be useful for parents when they're drawing up their budget for school and making decisions as to, you know, even what hours they might work in making those calculations? Right.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. Okay.
And you put 3 kids through, did you?
I did.
And how did you find it? I mean, you were putting them through, and they're grown up now, are they?
They're grown up. I worked while I was while my kids were in school, and in a small community, and I had a person coming into our house at the time to mind the children for a time, and as they grew older, then they went to an after school crèche or whatever. So what was tight was college. I live down in County Clare, and my 3 children went to college in Dublin, and I had 3 there at one stage altogether. So that was that took planning.
Pretty stressful. Yeah, and yes. I mean, in the school years, did you find it tight as well? They're obviously quite close together in age, so uniforms, books, you know, I don't know how many slice pans you were going through on an average week when it comes to making lunches. You know, it's pretty expensive, isn't it?
It is, and that's what I'm saying. I've great time for the credit union. You know, we did work on a budget. You know, we did work having a budget for let's say emergency costs, or going back to school costs, Christmas costs, holiday costs. We had the budget system in place, so that was very beneficial. But it is, Colm, it is an expensive time, but it's a time that passes fairly quickly too, so
right. Okay.
I have no regrets whatsoever.
Anyway, out of curiosity, anyway, you feel that it would be helpful to parents if there was a bigger breakdown given, and you know, they could have that level of detail, and who knows, if they wanted to raise the issue with schools or with local representatives or whatever, at least they would have the hard, clear data to do that with them.
It would be very useful then, as the figure is given out as a total. It's frightening more than anything else, you know. And parents are under enough stress or whatever.
Okay, so, well, look, mate, we'll put it out there. 087-484-8888 on the WhatsApp. If you have a pen and paper beside you, and you know what you've been, you know, through when you've been shopping around, be they chain stores or local draperies, where you have to buy a branded school jumper, and you know. Free school books are there, sure, but is your school using an electronic device? How much do you get towards that? Maybe you'd put that down as well. What are you looking at in terms of footwear going back to school? Are there added costs that maybe people aren't seeing? Is there a desk you had to assemble in the corner of the room for secondary school for somebody who's going back? Did you have to buy a flat pack desk? Is that an unseen cost which isn't listed in these? Do you think it's too high an estimate, basically, €450 for going back to primary school, €1,560 for going back to secondary school? Get in touch with us, 51551 for your texts, 087-484-8888 for your WhatsApps. It may be higher. Who knows? Megan, good afternoon to you.
Hi, how are you?
I'm not too bad, thanks. So the free books are in, but, you know, the issue of how people read the books and the electronic books are something that you take issue with.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's loosely related to the cost of going back to school, because somebody is paying for these books, whether it's us or the government. I have two secondary school children in an iPad school, which is fantastic. Their bags are lighter, you know, it's all technology. I have a daughter with special needs, so she benefits from the technology. But the issue I have, and I've had this since the beginning of their secondary school, is that In order to download the book, you have to buy a hard copy to get a code that's unique to then pop it into your iPad, and then you have access to an online version.
So for anybody who's unfamiliar with this, they get you buy the hard copy of the books. There's a kind of a scratch card type sticker on the inside of normally of the book. You scratch that, you get your unique code, you've downloaded some kind of a platform to your iPad or laptop, you enter the code, it enables you to download the book, and then you get an electronic version of that book for use on the laptop. And in theory, at least, you could do without the hard copy, although it's probably as well to keep it as a backup.
So we kept them as backups, you know, and one of my children is quite happy to use the book as well. But every year we have thrown out, I'd say, 20 untouched textbooks that are printed, paid for. And now I know they're paid for by the government, which is even worse. And there is no way of getting the code without the hard copy book. So I filled my green bin. It was outrageous. I cannot believe I had to throw.
So you're talking about
many
20 pristine books going into the green
book.
And to be clear about it, the reason you feel you can't bring these anywhere for secondhand use is it's a unique code on the inside. So what happened when you brought them to somewhere where you thought you might be able to pass them on?
Well, I popped them up on FreeCycle, Facebook. I contacted anybody I knew with children going into those classes. And nobody could use them because they also needed the code. So unless there was some scheme set up whereby the children in a non-iPad school were able to access those books that, you know, we had used the code, they didn't need the code, and they could be shared, that maybe would justify the amount of printing and money spent. But, I mean, it's just, we're trying to be sustainable, and this completely contradicts what I feel is moving forward with a sustainable approach.
Right.
It's infuriating.
Do you think maybe you should be, like take for example, you buy a book online, you buy the hard copy online, or you can buy, you know, the electronic, the ebook, the Kindle version, whatever you like, and it's cheaper. Do you think that option should be offered to parents, that they can just buy the electronic version and they should just be allowed to buy it cheaper?
I think so. And I mean, maybe I've missed something somewhere that there is the code available. I know there were some parents who managed to get it from one publisher, but then the other publishers won't. So I wrote to the Department of Education this time last year as I filled my green bin with brand new books. And I asked them, you know, regardless of whether they're free or not, they're being printed, they're not being opened, and they're being dumped. And there's children with schools with resources being pulled from them, you know, where this money could be spent, maybe.
Right. You sound a bit put out by the whole idea of even bringing
absolutely.
A book to the bin and putting it in.
Yeah.
It goes against every fibre of your being, right?
It does, yeah. It's really wrong. And when I think of children maybe in schools that don't have iPad schools and need those books,
okay.
I have no way. I'd have to drive around every school.
Did you have to pay for the iPads, by the way?
Yes.
You did?
Yes. They're about 1,200.
Each.
Now, they last for maybe, if they look after them, they maybe get certainly the 3 years out of them, if not longer. And they're fantastic. You know, it's a great way for them to learn, especially anybody with, you know, additional needs. It really is great.
Okay.
Their bags
are
light.
So you wouldn't quibble with, I mean, that iPad may not come under any of the categories that are listed by the Irish League of Credit Unions, but your back-to-school costs are easily over a grand based on, you know, the iPad alone. The idea of €1,560 in a secondary school, you wouldn't be long reaching that if you've already shelled out €1,200 for an iPad.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Okay.
Now, it's a once-off purchase, they say, but I'd say by the end of third year, you've got a battered-looking iPad with a broken screen. It's the nature of it, you know, with teenagers. But, yeah, I'm really baffled by the need to take the hard copy book. And regardless of who's paying, if I'm paying, I haven't benefited from this free book scheme yet until they start a new cycle, you know.
Okay.
But someone's paying for it.
Okay. And look, as you say, you've been proactive about this. You've paid for your iPad. You've contacted the Department of Education and you just want something done. Okay. Ellen, good afternoon to you.
Hi, how are you?
How are you doing? We did have, you know, people contacting us wondering how the figure of €1,450 was arrived at for primary school back-to-school costs and €1,560 for secondary school costs. What side of the fence would you be on? Would you be sceptical of those figures or do you think they're too low?
Oh, I think it's actually totally right. The costs bringing kids back to school, even now when there's so much, you know, help in like the book scheme and the lunches, it's still actually extortionate. I have a daughter, my eldest is going into transition year, and even just to do transition year is €600.
€600 just to be allowed to do transition year, is it?
Yes, yeah. And then I have another daughter going into junior cert. So it's €500 for the two of them. That's your voluntary contribution.
And this is in a free public school, €600 fee to do
There's
transition year.
There's nothing free in public schools. There is nothing free.
No,
I don't
but,
even
you
know why
but
that is
But
said.
Just lest anyone out there think that, you know, this is a premium rate being charged in a fee-paying school. That's €600 to do transition year. So,
oh yeah, just to do transition year. That's not including there's a trip in transition year that you'll want to go on. That doesn't include that.
Okay, so it's secondary school, so we'll go back to the Irish League of Credit Union survey. They have for 2025, school trips for secondary school is down at €208. You're probably not getting it for €208, are you? When it's the transition year trip away, it's, you know, the great thing that's sold to everybody in transition year. And in fairness, you know, people do enjoy it when they go on it, but it can be a ski trip or something else that, you know, is said it's key to bonding and good spirit in the year and everybody feels they can't miss out on it. Do you know how much it's going to be?
I actually don't know how much it is yet. Right. I'm afraid even.
Okay.
There's an app, there's a school app. The school app is hilarious because it actually gives you notifications on every money and thing that needs to be paid and you feel like you're hounded all the time by these notifications on this app. This has to be paid, this has to be paid, this has to be paid on top of everything else.
So transition year, so there's a voluntary contribution, sorry. Is that on top of the €600 transition year fee?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so how much is the voluntary contribution?
Oh, it's €500 for the two of them.
€500
for
the two.
I discounted because I have two in the same school.
So, okay, so for one pupil alone, let's split that in half, €250 in voluntary contribution plus the €600 for the transition year. That's €850 for one of them. Anything else up front before you head back?
Oh, there's €70 for insurance and their locker that you have to pay.
We're up to 920 now. Go on.
That's not included. Obviously, they'll need new runners, new hoodies, whatever. They might need a new bag because it's usually battered at the end of the year.
like the woman before me, I had to get them two iPads when they started. And actually, there was a fee for the secondary school to accept their place, and that fee was €200 up front.
So was
up.
200, was that offset against the voluntary contribution at all?
No, that wasn't included. This was a completely separate fee, and that was just to accept the place of the secondary school. This is a public school.
Right. So lunches then, you know, do they, you know, how does that work out in terms of, so we've got the school trips. Let me go back to the survey here. And school lunches, it says 170 in primary and 204 in secondary. Just I'm not quite sure whether that's what time frame that covers. But can you give us a ballpark of what you're talking about in school lunches on a weekly basis?
We're a family of five, and my youngest would avail of the free lunches in primary school, but she actually hates them. There was mould on one of the garlic breads, and that was it. She was turned off.
Done.
So she won't eat it. So I actually have to put a packed lunch in with her every day. So between the three of them and my shopping, and the price of shopping anyway, every week has gone extortionate as well. So that's an extra 100, 150 about just lunches, you know, just sorting out their lunches for the day, for the week.
Right.
You know, your shopping has gone up. I used to get a full shop for 140 a week, but it's a family of five.
That's probably up around 250 now, is it?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, and it's just getting more and more expensive. And I haven't changed anything. Like, I'm not out there having the best of the best.
Right,
I mean?
You're not putting caviar in the lunchbox every day.
No.
So what are you putting in the lunchbox?
Oh, your usual tuk tuks, cheese, apples, a roll. So, like, a 4-pack roll and done is 250, I think, now, or two, something like, yeah. So, you use three rolls, like, in one go. So, you're all the time replenishing every second day to pick up bits for lunches. Every mother knows what I'm talking about.
Right. Okay. And look, I mean, we'll take the name of one supermarket as generic across a number of them. We'll probably, you know, in general, we'll try and not single out retailers.
That's grand.
We just don't want them battering the phones and crying on unfair play. That's generic roll costs on all of that. So, you know, you anyway, in general, think the Irish League of Credit Union figures are about right, if not higher, and across the whole year, from what you're saying, it's well in excess of €1,560 for a secondary school pupil, particularly if they're transition year, and you don't even know the cost of the transition year trip away yet.
Not yet, but I'm not expecting it to be under €1,000. And we also have you have to pay for mock exams as well in third year, so I think they're €150.
This is to get external papers in and get them corrected and all of that, right? Was there any consultation on where the trip might be, or maybe, you know, putting out the feelers to parents as to what a good venue to go to might be? What an what would be within their budget? Any discussion of that?
I'm not on the Parents Association, so I don't know whether they actually consult with the Parents Association about that. But no, never.
Right.
Never
will she be going on it?
I don't know. I think if it's skiing, I don't think so.
Right. Okay.
I don't think she would like it, but we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Okay.
It's just pressure. It's pressure on top of pressure.
Okay. Kira, you're looking at it from the primary school point of view. That's the figure of 1,450. Too high, too low, bang on?
I think it's a bit too high because it includes after-school costs, which are optional for parents. So I guess some parents are using the after-school costs if they're working. Plus, as well, these after-school activities are optional for parents too. You know, so it's not compulsory for them. But I think a lot of parents need to push back. Like, my kids do not get new school bags every year. They get it, like, unless their school bag falls apart, they're not getting a new one. My daughter has a school bag and there's two zips on it and one of them's broken. So I said, pull the zip over the other way. Her teacher said, oh, your mum will get you a new school bag. I said, the teacher, don't tell her that, because until that falls apart, I'm not wasting money on school bags. Because where are the old school bags going but in the bin, and there's nothing wrong with them? Wash them in the washing machine, put them away. A lot of schools have uniforms and tracksuits. My kids' school, primary school, is the uniform and tracksuits, but they can wear the tracksuit all the time, which suits two of three of my kids are in primary school. The youngest one, she wants the school uniform with the skirt because she likes to look girly.
Right.
But as I said, she wouldn't wear the jumper because she thinks jumpers are for a boy. So when I went to pay for the jumper, I was saying that to the receptionist. She said, go down to Dunn's, get the generic one. There you go, €5 for the school crest and sew it on yourself. And there you go, that'll save you. I think the school jumper was €26. I think it'll cost me 11 between the jumper in the supermarket and the crest.
Okay, well, so, what they would say is, so the Irish League Credit Union, just to be clear about it, they say the criteria used in the survey, this is in a statement they issued to us, have remained comprehensive and consistent over recent years. Parents were asked about the broad range of costs they directly associate with their children returning to school, including essentials like uniforms, books, transport, after-school care, lunches, contributions requested by schools and other activities parents regularly pay for as part of the school year. I mean, I suppose it's time of year costs that they associate with back to school rather than nailed on costs. So taking all of that into account, can you see anywhere near the 1450 where that might have come from?
I can in a way, because I know when you get into school, there's a lot of stuff that goes on all year. And like that, you need to push back on your school. So like, you know, my school is very lucky. The voluntary contributions are low. And I ask them, well, I've got three kids, what's the discount? And they didn't have a discount until I came along, and then they came back and had one.
And do you know of anybody, without mentioning school name or, you know, obviously the people concerned, do you know of anybody who just flat out says, well, if it's voluntary, I'm not paying it?
Oh, lots of people do. And lots of people send their kids to after school and never bother paying the costs, or send them to, you know, school, after school activities and just don't, are cheeky like that. They won't pay anything even if they have it or they don't.
Okay, well, I suppose not like paying for after school you could categorise as cheeky, but not paying your voluntary contribution is taking the word voluntary literally and just saying,
because it's extortionate in some schools. I went from one school with three of my kids there, so I have five kids all together. The voluntary contribution was 150 a child. I went to another school and my oldest one now is in secondary school, but the three kids that are at primary, it's €60 for the first two and zero for the second. So how can you go from like paying €450 for three kids to €120? So, you know, I think parents' associations need to push back a lot because I think, like, I joined a parents' association at the first school my kids were in, and they were just like so elitist and, you know, no, we can't get rid of the full school uniform. You have to buy both. And I was thinking, well, parents can't afford that.
Okay.
But they want the school to look good. So I think parents need to push back a bit more.
Okay, sorry.
Where's the money going? What's it used for? Sorry.
Ellen, was it you wanted to come back in there?
I just have an example of, like, if you don't pay the voluntary contribution in a primary school anyway, in the primary school that my child's in, they actually won't give out the school diary to the child. You don't pay the contribution, the child is actually kind of being made stick out like a sore in the class, like, oh, your mum hasn't paid the contribution. You know, that's I thought those days were gone, but they're actually still at that crack. Like,
so the whole voluntary contribution has to be paid up front at the start of the year. There's no even monthly bit-by-bit scheme.
There's a monthly option in the secondary school, but not, you know, in the primary.
So,
and they have the thing that you get the school diary when you pay the contribution in the primary. So if you don't pay it and the teacher's handing out all the school diaries, it's like, oh, well, your mum didn't pay it, you don't get one.
So it's kind of voluntary with the added pressure that you will be outed as a non-payer.
Of course.
But they shouldn't out a child like that. That's bullying a child.
It is. It's terrible. So, it's real kind of old Irish education style. But that's what's happening, you know. And you don't want that to happen to your child, you know.
So it's an effective means of enforcing the quote unquote voluntary contribution.
There's nothing really voluntary about it. I mean, you can say you're not paying it, but you'd be hounded. As I said, if you're on an app, you're getting notifications all the time, like, you have to pay this, you have to pay this, and it does, you know, sink into you, like, and just go, oh God, I have that to pay, and, you know, you could be caught or something else would come on, or, you know, and you're stuck.
Okay. Well, some know. Look, some schools may have more sensitive ways of dealing, but as you say, it's not the first time I've heard the idea of a diary not being given out if a voluntary contribution isn't paid. And I suppose people might be reluctant to send their child into school as one of a minority who doesn't have the diary and all that signifies. Okay, anyway, look, we were talking about the Irish League of Credit Union survey and the figures, whether they tally with people, whether they don't. Maybe people have their own tot done. We've had some callers here where it would seem to be approaching or even exceeding the figure of €1,560 for a secondary school pupil or €1,450 for a primary school pupil. Some people think it's too high an estimate and that there are economies could be made elsewhere if they go and shop around. Interested in anyone's thoughts out there? 087-484-8888 for your WhatsApps, 51551 for your texts, 0818-715-815 for your calls. Back in a minute.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1. 0818 715 815.
Today with Claire Byrne with news.
People are getting into sticky situations when it comes to that time at the end of the summer and you're sending the children back to school. Many people just can't afford it.
Debate.
You're in favour of building more apartments. Why are smaller apartments, though, a problem?
And advice on the issues that matter to you.
And with your medical hat on, first of all, is it ever okay to use a sunbed no matter what age you are?
Today with Claire Byrne. Weekdays from 10 on RTE Radio 1 and the RTE Radio app.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, an award-winning guaranteed Irish company. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
The Ray Darcy Show, weekdays from 3 on RTE Radio 1.
Coming up on the show today, rugby legend Paul O'Connell joins us in studio for a chat. We help Lou Robbie of Little Lou Cooks celebrate the launch of her first cookbook, Make and Freeze, and half of the Hurstlips have news for fans about a special vinyl signing session. Our WhatsApp number is 0870 32 32 32. We will talk to you after Liveline.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Summer's here. Spruce up your bedroom for less with our sizzling summer sale offers at harrycurry.com.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
Colm O'Mungoyne here. Now, we're going to be talking to two teenagers, and there's another whole group of other teenagers who are very lucky that these young men have an interest in fishing because it took them to the water's edge. They're going to tell us about their story and what unfolded the other day. Tiernan Cobb, good afternoon to you.
Hi.
And hi to you, Kuba Domovsky.
Hello.
Tiernan, to you first. A group of lads enjoying their summer. What did you decide to do?
Me, Sean and Cuba, we all went down to the beach to go fishing together.
Okay, what day was this?
This was, I think it was Wednesday.
Right. And what did you have with you? What was the plan for the day?
Just to go fishing for the evening. And we just had a rod and a bag full of just like drinks and everything.
Good stuff. And what beach were you going to?
Rosslare Harbour.
Okay, do you know it well?
Yeah.
Your local fellas?
Yeah.
Cuba, do you like fishing down there?
Yeah.
How often would you go, Cuba?
Probably a couple of times a week.
Right. Any luck?
Not really. Tiernan caught a bass not too long ago.
All right. So you're well used to going down. It's partly about what you catch, but, you know, what's a day's fishing really about for anyone who doesn't know what the attraction of fishing is for young lads?
It's just kind of like, it's fun. Just chill, it's fun.
Bit of crack, chilling with the friends.
Yeah.
Bag of stuff. What was in the bag, Tiernan?
It was just like drinks and food because we thought we were going to stay there for a while until the incident happened.
Okay. Well, tell us what happened. When did you first notice you were down there with your fishing lines in the water, was it? What did you notice?
We noticed the line getting dragged down way to the left by the pair of off. And we knew there was a current there. And then all of the teenagers started getting in the water and they started like slowly drifting down the pier wall.
So when you noticed your lines being dragged, you saw, did you have floats on the line? Is that how you particularly noticed it? Or why did you notice the particular drag on the line?
No, we just had like weights on it and we could like see it just like drifting. Like we would have left it for like 5-10 minutes and it would be like, it would have moved a good distance.
Okay, and for anyone who isn't familiar with swimming in the sea near a pier wall, what would a current like that mean?
it would be very dangerous.
And Cuba, you noticed the drag as well, did you?
Yeah.
And did you see the swimmers in the water? Were they being moved by this current?
Yeah, they were like only a few meters like in front of us.
Okay. And Cuba, can you remember how far or how quickly they were moving when this current started to really get the pull on them?
They were moving like, it didn't seem fast, but when you looked away and looked back, it definitely like looked like they were further away.
And did they notice they were moving, or was it like that for them? They were in the water and gradually drifting out towards the further out to sea.
After a bit, like, we noticed it, we started shouting at them. Then after a bit, they noticed as well that they were getting taken and they couldn't swim back.
And Tiernan, could they hear you shouting at them, or were they too busy playing with each other to be able to hear what you were shouting at them?
Yeah, well, originally we told them not to get in the water and they just ignored us. And then they didn't listen, and then they just started getting pulled by the current.
And when, lads, did you realise, or when did they realise, as far as you could see, looking there with your fishing lines in the water, when did they realise they were getting into bother?
They just started, like, they were trying to swim against it, and they started struggling, and then they realised that they were in trouble, and they started, like, calling for help.
So, Cuba, when you could hear them shouting and looking like they were getting into bother, what did you do?
We called 112 and requested a lifeboat.
And how did you know to do that?
Just kind of remembered the number.
Right. And from going down to the water, would you be conscious that you kind of need that number on standby in case you got into bother yourself?
Yeah.
Right. And whose idea was it, Tiernan, to ring the 112? Who was first to the phone?
Well, Cooper rang it and then he passed the phone to me, but we could see that they were getting dragged and we were just like saying to each other, should we call it? And then they started going. They kept on getting dragged and they were out in deeper water, so we just like knew to call it.
Okay, so you ring 112 and they ask you what service you want. Talk us through the phone call and what you were able to tell them.
Yeah, so they were asking us like what service we needed, and we requested the lifeboat, and I was on the phone with him, and he just kept on telling me to stay on the line, and he kept on asking me like whereabouts they were and if we could still see them and everything like that.
And you were able to tell them where you were, and did you tell them you thought that it was a current that had got them in bother?
Yeah, we told them that it was the current.
And how were you able to stay calm and just tell them? Was the person on the other end of the line just kept asking you questions to keep you going?
Yeah, they just kept on asking questions.
And were you stressed at all when you were talking to them?
Yeah, pretty nervous.
Right. And what about yourself, Cuba? You can't hear what's going on the line. You're just watching the people in the water at this stage and wondering when the lifeboat would arrive. How are you feeling?
Yeah, I was pretty shook up. I was very nervous as well.
Right. Did you have to sit down? Was it kind of shaky legs territory?
Not really. I was just kind of standing, just quite nervous.
So how long did it take for the lifeboat to arrive, Tiernan?
We called, and then they like called the lifeboat men what happened. It took for them actually to get out of the water and to be like fine and everything. It took maybe around 45 minutes.
Right. You're mighty men to have, you know, had the presence of mind to ring the lifeboat. I mean, did the teenagers get to talk to you afterwards? Did they thank you?
Yeah, well, yeah. I seen one of them the other day, and he like thanks a lot.
Right. And what about you? What about you, Cuba? Have you seen them since?
I haven't. No.
Right. And did you call your parents? Because you know, when you're in a stressful situation like that, the next call maybe after the lifeboat might have been some of your parents or older brothers or sisters. Did you call anyone to come down and let them know what was going on?
My mum was on a walk nearby with my sister, and they showed up because they seen all the lifeboats.
And were they worried that, you know, they knew you were down at the water's edge? Were they concerned maybe that you'd fallen in or anything?
Yeah, my mum was really concerned.
Right, so what did, when she saw you, she must have been mightily relieved, was she?
Yeah, she was. She gave me a big hug.
Right, and Tiernan, were your folks or your brothers or sisters aware of what was going on down at the water's edge?
Yeah, well, after a while, my mum rang me and she was just asking me if I was okay, and I just told her what happened, and she was like saying to me, like, well done for calling the life partner.
So it all ended well, and, you know, I suppose what would be the message when you, at the end of this story, would be when a 13-year-old lad who's down with his fishing rod and knows the currents of a particular area advises you not to get into the water, maybe listen to him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that's a good moral of the story. And know what the emergency services numbers are as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so what are the plans for the rest of the summer, lads? Are you going to be going back fishing, or were you nervous going back to the water's edge?
We'll definitely be going back fishing, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And Sean, what's his surname? Sean Holden is...
Holden,
yeah.
Sean Holden. We have to give a shout out to the other hero of the hour there, Sean Holden, who is... there and witnessing this, and probably a great help to you as well, was he?
Yeah.
All right. Tiernan, Cuba, and to Sean, fair play to you all. Great presence of mind to be calling the emergency services, and great to give the advice in advance. So listen to the experts, folks, if you're ever near a body of water. The fishermen know what's going on, and when they see the drag on the line, if they know there's currents, it might be as well listening to local knowledge. Back in a minute.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
RTE Radio 1.
Back together again for one amazing night. The Doobie Brothers live. All the hits live. Three Arena Dublin this Monday, July 21st. Tickets available now. Miss the Doobie Brothers live at 3 Arena this Monday.
Music updates on RTE Radio 1.
Don't worry about saving these songs, and if one of our instruments breaks, well, it doesn't matter. When the south wind blows, you'll have fallen into the place where everything is music.
I remember the sickness was forever.
I remember snuff videos.
The South Wind Blows with Philip King, every Sunday night at 10 on RTE Radio 1 and the RTE Radio app.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Experience summer comfort for less. Explore our sale on curtains and bedding. Perfect time to update and freshen your home.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
Now, we heard from Cuba and Tiernan before the break there. If you have any stories of near misses yourselves, and when people maybe should have listened to people at the water's edge, you can contact us 0818 715 815 or 087 484 8888. Two young lads with great presence of mind to call the emergency services and stay calm and be able to give details of their location and what was going on in the water at 12, 13 years of age. I don't know whether I would have had the presence of mind to be able to do that myself. I suppose you don't know until you're in the situation. If you were ever in a similar situation, maybe contact us, as I say, 087 484 8888. Francis, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Colm.
You were maybe tuned into us on Monday. I don't know whether we'll put the listeners through the horrors of some of what we were discussing there when we were listening to Linda the cleaner, who was talking through some of the war stories she had of cleaning toilets. But nonetheless, anyway, it pricked your interest, and you had occasion to spend not a penny but 50 cent in a shopping centre recently, and you'd have some questions to ask about whether or not it was value for money, the fee that was charged for going in to use the toilet.
Well, while one doesn't mind using a fee in an emergency like that, as I told your lady on the phone, I was in Spain recently in Alicante, and I went into a shopping mall there. I needed to use the facilities, and they were absolutely pristine. And I did say to her, and I will repeat it, you could actually eat your dinner off the floor. It was so spotlessly clean.
And when did she, so what just, you were able to, like, shiny tiles, and the smell, how would you describe it? Fragrant?
Fragrant. It's citrusy smell as you go in. It wasn't a nauseous smell. It was absolutely lovely. A fresh, beautiful smell.
You could have spent the rest of your holiday there.
Absolutely.
Eating your dinner off the floor.
Eating your dinner off the floor.
Okay, very good. A bog standard buffet. But anyway, by sharp contrast, you returned home and went into a toilet to pay a fee, expecting similar service?
Well, I've been in this particular place before.
Which we shall not mention.
Which we shall not mention. And they have now, they're now charging 50 cent. You have to go through, you pay your 50 cent, the barrier opens, you go in. I found myself queuing behind six other people. And when you do go in, you can get this stench, a musty smell. It's not a clean smell. It smells dirty all the time.
All right. Is it the smell of the odours you might associate with the toilet, or is it a kind of a damp odour? Where would you put it? Stale, is it?
It's just a stale, not clean smell.
Okay. And would you be eating your dinner off the floor anytime soon?
Absolutely. Oh, my God.
Not even a starter?
Not even a crisp that you'd let fall on the floor.
The 5 second rule definitely not applying on the floor of this facility.
Definitely not. And it's very poor. And I found a lot of the places here in Ireland, when you go in, they're not clean. They leave a lot to be desired.
All right. And there was somebody in charge of the toilets, but obviously, if there was a queue of six people waiting to use it in front of you, it was obviously a busy facility in the shopping centre that you went to.
Yeah, it is a fairly busy facility. However, having said that, the people who use the facilities it's incumbent on them to make sure they leave it as they found it, which they don't always do. And the ladies who come along to clean afterwards have a lot to put up with. However, if they can do it in Spain, why can't they do it here?
So I suppose you went in when you eventually got up to the top of the queue of six, what scene greeted you? You've already had, I suppose, the taster, if that's the right word, in the smell. Did the sight match the smell when you entered the toilets?
It did, actually. It wasn't clean. There were, you know, the wash basins were all wet. There was paper on the floor. The cubicle that I went into hadn't been flushed properly.
That's a basic now, isn't it? By the previous owner.
Yes.
Or the previous user, should I say.
Yeah. And like I said to you earlier, it's incumbent on those who use the facilities to make sure they leave it as they found it.
I suppose there is that moment where somebody is in a busy toilet where they think, What is the greater social service here? Do they exit the toilet and allow the new user in if the cistern hasn't fully filled after the last flush? Or do they wait and not consider the difficulty somebody might be in outside the cubicle door? Where would you stand morally on that question?
I will always, always, if the toilet doesn't flush, I will wait till it fills again.
And flush.
And flush, yeah.
Okay. Now, look, that's the shopping centre, and you have established your impeccable standards for toilets. You wouldn't regard it as a high bar. It's the norm you should expect is a spotless toilet if you're paying a fee to enter it. But you went recently to a restaurant and similar bad toilet experience.
Yes, in Dublin, my sister and I went into a place and we were told the toilets were upstairs. I went up. The stairs going up to the toilet had a carpet on it, and my feet were sticking to the carpet going up the stairs.
Sticking to the carpet?
Sticking to the carpet. Oh. And when I got to the facility, I couldn't sit down properly. I had to squat because I wouldn't use it. I couldn't sit on the toilet.
Toilet seat not up to scratch.
Nothing up to scratch. It was absolutely horrifically dirty.
Okay, and was it wet because maybe of a standing gentleman user? Was it loose or was it just grubby looking?
It was just filthy dirty.
Really?
It hadn't absolutely filthy dirty.
So you reluctantly had to, I suppose, execute a hover over the toilet. Would that be a fair description?
Absolutely, only because I was really, really desperate at that point. Other than that, I'd have walked out and looked for somewhere else, but I wouldn't have made it.
Right, you were caught at that point.
So then, like, you've surveyed the toilet and you've to go back down the sticky carpet on the stairs. So what was going through your mind as you squelched down the sticky carpet back to the main body of the cafe?
I paid for the food that we'd ordered before I went up the stairs. My sister and I took one bite out of what we got and left. We didn't eat it.
Right, you obviously told her about the state of the toilets before she tucked into her Sambo, did you?
I did. I said to her, Bernie, you can't use that bathroom up there. It's just not suitable.
You didn't think of sparing her the grim details of the toilet and just maybe letting her eat her sandwich? No, you thought you were doing her a favour by telling her.
Well, I was, because I was thinking, if the toilets are like that, I wonder what the kitchen is like.
And why was the carpet so sticky?
Oh, it was dirty. It was absolutely stinking. It was filthy. It was dirt. Absolute dirt.
Just manky.
Just manky. I've thrown out better.
Sticky to the point of like your feet making noise on it as you went up and down the stairs.
My shoes were actually sticking to each step as I was going up along.
Right, you must have been. Were you tempted to wash the shoes when you went home?
I was tempted to throw them out, but I didn't. They were too expensive.
And apart from all that, you are an observer at this stage, unfortunately, you know, not willingly, of poor toilet behaviour. The issue of hand washing is something else that's come on your radar, is it?
It is, absolutely. I mean, you go into use the facility and you see women, young and old, they go in, they use the facility, they come out, they pass by the wash basin and they merrily go on their way. They don't wash their hands.
Yeah, there is a school of thought out there that's observed, that, you know, some people are a member of, that they kind of go, if I wash my hands at the hand basin, I'm going to have to put my hands on the door handle that other people may not have washed their hands before they use. So what's the point in me washing my hands? I am not a member of that school of thought, I would hasten to add, and I suspect that you're not either, Francis.
No, but it always helps to take an extra little bit of toilet paper with you so that you're able to, when your hand, stick it up under your oxter, wash your hands, dry your hands, and when you're going out the door, take the paper down and open it, open the handle, put it over the handle to open the door. It's right. As simple as that. Or I often pull down if I have a long sleeve jumper, I pull the sleeve down and open it with that, because right. I'm taking that off and washing it when I get home.
And if you have a side hustle as a jewel thief, you've got the added advantage if you've got rid of all your fingerprints off the door handle.
Oh, that's it.
I won't probe you on that. I won't probe you on that. I'm
Let's
sure.
Not go there.
Anyway, you wouldn't tell me even if you did. Okay. So anyway, look, toilets have a ways to go before they get to the standard of Alicante.
We a long, long way to go, I have to say. Even in the best of toilets. Now, there are places that when I go shopping that I know I can use the facilities there, and they're very clean and very nice. They're not a patch on Alicante.
Okay.
Not a patch. So
anyone looking to brush up on toilet standards needs to spend time in the toilets of Alicante and in the particular toilet. I'm sure you'd be happy to furnish them with the details of the particular toilet if they were minded to contact you. Okay, Francis, thanks for that. Richard O'Regan, I think it'd be fair to say, bad and all as Francis' experience was, what you encountered in Mullaghmore was a grim experience.
Terrible experience.
It began as a beautiful day.
It's a fantastic spot, fantastic diving on this wild Atlantic way. No toilet. And there is toilets, but we were told were always closed since before COVID.
Richard, I'm just going to have to cut across you. And I am sorry to interrupt you. Just the quality of your line is bad. So we'll try and endeavour to fix that. And we'll try and get you back up again. Ger O'Brien, good afternoon to you.
Colm, how you doing? How are things?
I'm not too bad. Paid toilets.
Paid toilets,
yeah. Do you feel you got value for money the last time you spent a penny?
Absolutely. We were in Béziers in southern France about maybe 6 weeks ago, and there is a fantastic shopping centre in the town called the Polygon. And when you went up to it, it was, you could use your credit card. It was 50 cents. It didn't actually take coins, so you had to use a credit card or else the shopping center card, whichever it was. When you went in, you were greeted by singing birds, song, and all that kind of stuff. Beautiful, subdued lighting. The effect of the place was like they had dug it out of the rock or something, you know, that kind of sandstone kind of thing.
Songbirds. The noise of songbirds.
Songbirds singing, yes.
Okay, but and also, no parrots, obviously, because it's the polygon.
No parrot. No, very good. Very good, Colin. No parrots. Very good. And then you had cascading water as well, just to kind of...
Actual cascading water or a stream.
No, actual cascading water, like a little tumbling down through the rocks and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And then you went to the toilet, as it were, as whatever.
Yeah.
Absolutely beautiful floors, lovely marble floors. There was, I think I used them maybe twice in maybe 4 days, and there was a cleaning lady always visible. She was always in the area to help you if you had a problem getting in or getting out or whatever. But there was constantly, but absolutely spotless. Probably one of the best toilets. The only other one I can think of is in Helsinki Airport is the same. You're greeted by bird song again and cascading water and all that. So maybe it's a continental thing. I don't know. Maybe it would assist a bit.
Yeah, what's the advantage of the bird song? Do you think it's there to cover up the noises that are there with more pleasant noises?
It may possibly be, yes.
Right.
That could be why.
And the cascading water, just a pleasant accoutrement or maybe to the noise of it?
A pleasant accoutrement, and maybe also to help those who might need a little bit of help in fully functioning, as it were. Exactly.
Yeah. Stage fright at the urinal is not uncommon.
Exactly, that's correct. The washing of the hands thing, brilliant afterwards as well. Lovely long marble trough and hot water and your fan at the end and all this kind of stuff. Yeah, and then also there was if you liked a bit of a smelly thing on your hand or something like that, they had that as well.
Right, all for 50 cents.
Brilliant. All for 50 cents.
Yes. Right. I think the question ringing in the minds of listeners here is why you only went twice.
Because I had travelled around quite a lot. That we were only there for 4 days, so unfortunately we could only make... But the toilets were also part of... there was on the top floor of the shopping centre was a complete open-air restaurant, so people used... That was part of the reason for them, I think, as well. But that's why they were probably kept in a very good state, you know. Probably one of the best toilets I've ever visited.
Was it free for patrons of the restaurant? Or did they have to pay the 50 as well?
I think they had to pay the 50 as well. I think it was just taken as the facility was provided by the shopping centre and you just paid the 50 cents.
Okay. I was in a toilet in Germany recently where you had to pay 150 to get into the toilet, but it shot out a voucher at the turnstile, which you could pay by card or cash, and the voucher was for 50 cent, which could be offset at the bar against the price of coffee or whatever drink you're having. So it kept a captive audience.
That's a very good idea, yeah.
There you go.
That's excellent.
But twice the price of what you had in the Polygon.
Well, that's quite true. But then I suppose things are pretty reasonable. That's part of France anyway, I think. It just happened to be like that. So that was it.
Okay.
The best, actually, as an aside on it, the best value down there was at this time of the year, SNCF do a brilliant rail ticket for €20 for 2 days and you can travel all around southern France.
Okay.
So where would you be going?
Absolutely brilliant. Well, I mean, you've told us where you'd be going. You'd be going to the Polygon to admire the majesty of the loos in there.
The toilets.
Okay, Willie, your experience in toilets, good or bad?
Kilkenny. Well, I just want to say a draw there, but Kilkenny. I went in one day, and the person came out, and the stench was bad. I had to run out again.
Right.
And run back out.
Was it a single stall toilet? Just a small toilet, was it?
Kind of, yeah. You went in the doorway, and the person came out, and the fellow said, "You want the waterfall running in there all the night to make noise?" But was bad. I had to run out and I went up to another establishment up the road. I knew it, you know. I went in there and the bathroom was spotless.
Right.
But you know what's missing in bathrooms?
You
know the little hand towel years ago in the 70s? You pull this hand towel down and it'd click.
Oh, yeah. This is the cloth one that would be laundered cloth towel, is it?
That's right. Yeah, they were great because you had a clean towel every time. You know, you pulled it, you know, a click and then you were grand and wash your hands. And you had a little dryer as well. And they were great, but they've done away with them, I think.
And which is it that you don't like, the paper ones or the air dryers?
The hair dryer's handy. I have much hair. You could dry your hair, which is rain. But the paper ones are all right. You know, they're not bad. But I normally, you know, it'd be okay. But I prefer the older ones, you know, because they're easier to, you know, they're a clean towel, you know what I mean?
And come here, the one you went into in Kilkenny where somebody was coming out, did they look like they might have been the guilty party for causing this? Or was there a general state of the toilet anyway? I mean, did they look apologetic or embarrassed coming out?
No, but I tell you, they didn't look apologetic. But the person that came out very quick, if you know what I mean, ran so fast. Definitely a guilty person.
Right. Maybe that's what happened. Maybe a quick exit is what had happened on the other side. Maybe that was the source of the bother in the first place.
I don't know if we're ever on a farm, but there's a healthy farm, there's a healthy centre in a farmhouse, in the couch. If we're in a couch, where there's all the cow dummies. That's a healthy bed on a farm. You know what I mean? A healthy scent.
Yeah. It was worse than that.
But in relation to a public toilet, is a different situation. But that person ran and passed me, so I knew I was in trouble.
Right.
I came flying back out again as fast as I walked in.
Did you overtake them?
I can't run that quick now. Hold on.
All right.
But I tell you what I'm going to do the next time before I leave you go is I'm going to bring a tin of, you know, a tin of deodorant, links or something with me.
Yeah.
On standby.
Well, the box of matches is one I've heard of that, you know, a struck match and then you extinguish it straight away and the smell of the sulfur smoke will cover up the worst of the smell in the toilet. That's why sometimes people have a candle or a box of matches inside in the toilet. So,
I wouldn't risk that with the smell of gas. It could cause an explosion.
All right. Thanks, Willie. We'll take a break. Good luck.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1. 0818 715 815.
Irish raspberry season is here. Let the fun begin. Pick up a punnet of Keeling's Irish raspberries in store today. Juicy, delicious, feel-good fruit. Fresh from our farm. Love that Keeling's feeling.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Summer's here. Spruce up your bedroom for less with our sizzling summer sale offers at harrycurry.com.
Get in touch with Liveline on 0818 715 815.
Hello, Jim McCauley. How are you doing?
Good afternoon.
How are you?
Well, I'm okay, but I took great interest in what that lady, more so than what the gentleman said afterwards. The standard of cleanliness and health and safety in most of our public toilet areas are a disgrace.
And leave a lot to be desired, in your view?
No, they're a disgrace. Not a lot to be desired, a disgrace. Bosaris is one of the main stations in Dublin, and the cubicles don't even... Half the cubicles don't have locks on the doors.
Right, so that's gone. You're limited to three of them. At that stage, which probably get quite a bit of use as a result.
Yes, and if you have a medical condition or if you have a problem, you don't want to be stuck in a cubicle that you can't even keep the door closed.
And you'd be of the view anyway that, like Francis, that it's up to users of toilets as much as it is to the cleaning staff to at least leave it in the condition you found it.
Yes, I agree with you. Leave it in the condition you find it. But when you find it in a mess, what do you do? And if you're taking shorts, you can't say, oh, the hell with it, I'll go somewhere else.
Okay.
You
travel a lot, and anyway, you feel that, particularly in the transport hubs, they could do it.
I will say that, and I said it to the lady I was talking to, a lot of the supermarkets, the likes of, and without plugging people, areas, the supermarket toilets are nearly always spotless.
Right. Well, maybe they're used by staff and customers alike. But anyway, Jim McCauley, thanks for calling in.
Okay, good luck. See you.
Thanks very much. Bye. Milda, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Colin.
Taking up it's never too late to take up a hobby.
Well, I'll tell you, it's never too late because I took up one hobby at 40 when I went down to Cork to work, and that was taekwondo.
Took up taekwondo at 40. Now, had you been athletic before this?
Yes, I always played like tennis, badminton, squash, all the racket games. and I just went down there just to start something new. So I kind of liked the idea of it, and there were two brilliant trainers, Dennis and Cyril. And so anyway, I stayed with that, and I was in court for the whole 10 years until I got my third Dan Black belt.
Third Dan Black. So just how many belts are there before you get to the third Dan Black belt?
Oh, gosh. Like, I think you get in most of the organisations, you go up to 7, and then you get kind of a master's degree after that. And you can teach and everything after the third or fourth one. But anyway, I went up as far as the third one, and I was like 50 at that stage, because you have to spend a few years between the different belts. Do you know what I mean? You can't just, you have a lot of learning to do and a lot of exercises to do each year to kind of to achieve that. But it was brilliant. It was absolutely so good for you to focus.
Milda, your line is a bit shaky, so we are going to get you up on a better line, and we'll come back to you, because Brian on the other line is also somebody who agrees that never too late to do what you love. Brian, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Colin. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, not at all. So, not an elderly man by any stretch of the imagination, but then again, you're talking about doing something a little bit later than your teens. What did you take up?
Well, I always obviously liked music, and I took up singing in my early 40s. Well, if you could say semi-professionally, it took me a good few years later to go out into the big bad world and sing. And I started off in nursing homes. And I'm still in nursing homes, and thankfully they still like me.
And what held you back before this? Would you have been self-conscious?
Absolutely. Terrified. I would have, we'd say, a closet singer. I would have been practicing in my back room, whatever. And it was like different stages of events, as in meeting different people along the way. And a good friend, several good friends of mine, but had asked me about going, just meeting up. And I met up, and he was singing. He had this fabulous little setup, and I got hooked.
Right. Now, what kind of stuff do you sing? What's on the repertoire?
On the repertoire is anything from Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, Michael Bublé.
You're a crooner.
The Drifters, the Beatles, Elvis. And I would try and sing all of the best songs. Every song I'd sing, even 20-year-olds would know it. They mightn't like it, but they would know the stuff, and it's very upbeat. And only in just recent years, one or two other friends of mine, we got together shortly after COVID, of course, because we couldn't meet up during COVID, and we rehearsed weekly, and we just put a little set, and we're all touching, well, one's over 60, the rest of the others were just touching 60, and we loved, and we actually get the odd gig here and there, and it goes down very well. I love music. I'm very passionate about it, and I think it's wonderful for everybody. People out there all over the world.
And do you even make a few quid out of it?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. And I'm tax compliant, I would like to say.
Yeah,
as well.
No, that's. And where can people catch you?
On this Saturday night in the Trinity Sports Centre, myself and the Trula, we're called Main Attraction, and we're there. And thanks to God, we go down an absolute storm. Now, every place we've been in, we go down a storm. We're not expecting to get record deals or anything else like that. We go out, we have a lovely sense of humour out on the stage. There's a little silly jokes, if you know what I mean, daddy jokes type of silly stuff. One of the lads throws out every now and again, and but the music itself goes down, and you're nearly up dancing immediately. So,
all right, it's like an old school cabaret. You get a bit of comedy, you get a bit of entertainment, you get a bit of music, you interact with the audience, you make sure they stay involved.
It is. It's powerful stuff, and we sing to backing tracks. So, one of the lads is a guitarist. I was an old drummer, but thankfully, in this modern day, we don't have to lug all drums around, keyboards, guitars. We have little laptops,
anyway. Get over your youthful self-consciousness as early as you can in life, and do what you love. Would it be fair to say that's the advice?
Without a shadow, Without a shadow of doubt, Colm, and I just do believe that. But a good friend of mine, Fat, has played in all over the world with different people. And I said, how did you get there to the White House in the green room? Practice, practice, practice. And practice obviously gives you confidence. If you feel confident about it, because the very first gig I did, my neighbour asked me to do a 40th birthday party for her. And I said, just what song do you want? She said, no, for the night. And as you can imagine, I nearly fell to my knees and had to do a lot of preparation. Now, it was a couple of months away. And at that, the girl asked me to sing at our wedding.
Right. And, the day job...
And it took off, just in there.
And the day job day. Is?
I'm a prison officer.
Right. And do you ever come across any of... Any of the people you encounter in work out singing?
I do, of course.
Do you give them a bar of Jailhouse Rock while you're giving them Aldi up on stage?
Well, it's probably one of the songs I probably don't do. It's like everything else. If you're fair in life, you know what I mean?
That's it.
I don't have too much trouble, yeah. Anyway, I love
the music is for everyone.
Music absolutely is for everyone, okay. by a mile.
We've got Milda back up on the line there, Brian. Thanks a million for that. Milda, anyway.
Colm, thank you very much.
Okay,
not a worry. Third Dan black belt in the bag by 50, but that wasn't enough for you. To take us from there, what else have
that
you taken up?
That wasn't enough. I kind of continued doing different bits of training here and there. And then at 64, I took up powerlifting.
Powerlifting, right.
Yeah. So about 7 weeks later, I entered. I didn't know what I was doing, but I entered a competition, the Nationals, which was down in Wexford. And I actually came out pretty good in that. It's the powerlifting. It's your bench, your squat and your deadlift. So you compete in all three.
And you're lifting stuff like dumbbells and that kind of thing, is it?
Not at all.
Right, so we're not picturing some bald guy with a mustache and a leotard with a massive big ball-shaped dumbbells on either end. No, not that kind of crack.
No, kind of like the Olympic bar and then you have the plates each side.
Right.
And then you lift the weights up off the ground or with a bench press, you know, where you're lying on your bench and you're just pushing. And then the squat, you know, a squat. So squat is then with the barbell on your back and then you have weights. But it was brilliant.
And how long have you been doing that? You took that up at 64. How long have you kept that going?
Oh, I'm at it still. Like I'm lifting the same weights even better now than I was then. And it's fantastic. I mean, I'd highly recommend anybody to do it.
And do you feel the benefits of it? Because, you know, a lot of physiotherapists and doctors on air will say, and you hear them giving public advice, that resistance training is good for everything, for bone density, for all sorts of things. Have you noticed the benefits?
But my goodness, you'd notice so many benefits, Colm. Like anything from, you hear people all the time going on about as we age, we start losing a certain amount of muscle each year. Well, with this, you can keep on gaining muscle for as long as you live. Once you do kind of weights, it helps you to get that on, which has a brilliant effect in the body. And that also, I consider myself kind of quite strong. So I think it's good to be strong as you get older. And also the bones, if you think about it, that as we age, we can lose some, you know, a lot of the calcium out of the bones and lose bone density. It's great for that. It's brilliant for your posture. That's a huge thing when you get old. I think it is anyway. And there's loads of things.
Great. Also, if you're doing that, you probably need to put a bit of protein in your diet as well. Milda, we're up against it time-wise, but thanks for that insight there.